Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for July 30th. It's brought to you by Shooters. I'm John Gibson, and with me in sleepy cyberspace is Jim Allen. What's happening,
buddy? Oh, that's cruel. Accurate, harsh, but fair, as you can say.
Yeah, it's not harsh if it's accurate.
I'm well, man.
Good.
Olympic land, which is kind of like, knows no bounds where I'm currently employed.
Yeah, the medal that you win there is for being able to stay awake.
Yeah, it's called Survivor.
All right, well, this week we've got a chat with Michael Westbay, Statman extraordinaire, and we're going to discuss Major League guys and the top players for July, so let's start clearing the bases. All right, so I asked Michael Westbay if he could do a quick look at the counts and basically render what counts the batters were having more success in this season. Of course, my question was vague, and nothing is easy for Saber stat heads, I think. I think it was hard for him to hard for him to decipher exactly what I wanted. And I blame myself because the question could be misconstrued.
One, don't blame yourself, because usually when we do these studies, they usually start like this. You ask a question, you start looking at it, and then you realize you didn't understand what your question was. And they don't laugh. You make it sound like that's so unusual.
This sound like confusion started before the question was even asked, which probably
exactly,
it did.
It's not until you actually try to answer the question that they realize the question is not what you're...
It's faulty.
Yeah, the question is not the question you're trying to answer. You're trying to answer something else that didn't pop into your brain. So
I asked him to look at, you know, these outcomes in counts and see where the hitters were getting most of their hits. And I think that was the impetus of a problem that we solved by looking at the batting average for counts, certain counts.
Right.
And I say the end at bats, and Michael was talking about results. And, you know, I just said, let's look at the first half of the season. He went back four seasons, which, you know, he had the time to do. So that's not a problem, and we appreciate it. But it's hard to cover all that in 10 minutes.
Agreed.
And, of course, we didn't cover all of his findings in the 10 minutes. Mm. But we did discover something that might change the way you watch games, which is, you know, where a lot of hits are coming from, count-wise.
Right.
And he put together a graphic or chart, and if you click on the link on my blog site in my podcast entry, you'll be able to find that chart. And I strongly encourage you to open that file and listen, because it allows you to follow along a little bit easier. I wasn't able to open it on anything except my iPhone, but I think the way he's got it set up now, other computers and PDFs and all that stuff, I think it should be easy to open.
Right. What I did, I kind of cheated. I put all the data he sent me into an Excel file, and then I pulled it into a database so I could look at it the way I wanted to look at it.
Right.
So I used Crib Notes.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and check out what his findings were. All right. Well, I'm joined in cyberspace again by Michael Westbay. Thanks a lot for taking the time to come on the show, bud.
Always a pleasure.
So I asked you to do an assignment here. I asked you to look into the counts during the All-Star break so we could see what counts hitters have been successful in, and conversely, what counts pitchers have gotten more outs on. So what did you find in the numbers through July 18th?
Well, nothing really surprising. 3-0 pitches are the best for hitters.
Yummy.
Batters all hitting a little bit over 500 so far for the year.
But only 28 hits.
Only 28 hits, so that means 60 at-bats. Not really a very good representation of the number of hits or the ability to hit 3-0.
Right, but doesn't that surprise you that many guys have been allowed to swing 3-0? Because I don't really see it that often.
Well, when you consider that only 26 hits happened last year, yes, I am surprised.
Yeah, it sounds like a high number to me. So I guess they're doing better through a half a season here.
Uh-huh.
Okay, what else did you find?
Well, the absolute worst count for a batter to try to get a hit is 0-2.
I could have guessed that.
Batters are only hitting 147. on 0-2 pitches.
Well, that figures. In fact, that's kind of high, if you ask me.
And, but what really surprised me here was that over 1,000 batters have struck out on 0-2, because watching Japanese games, pitchers never challenge the batter on 0-2.
It seems
one
like,
strike, yeah. Two strike, waste pitch, strike three. That's the normal pattern. And if you look at the counts, there are over twice as many strikeouts for 1-2.
Yeah.
So strike, strike, waste pitch, strike is really does happen a lot.
Yeah, it seems like that's the pattern. We've had, what is it, 1,039 strikeouts on 0-2 pitches and then 2,340 strikeouts on 1-2 pitches. So, yeah, you're right.
The pitchers are ready to challenge them once they're at 1-2.
Or make them swing at balls that are disguised as strikes but actually end up out of the strike zone.
Right. But still, over 1,000 so far this year, that number seems kind of high to me.
I bet fans of certain teams don't even think that they've seen it one time for their team pitching.
Oh, you can say that again.
Now, what else did you find? I mean, I still was interested in the number of hits, and I think the chart shows that there were 1,253 hits on the first pitch.
Yes, and the first pitch actually has the most number of hits for any count. But if you consider, there are more first pitches than there are second pitches. You can't have a second pitch without the first pitch. So statistically, you've kind of got a downward slope as the number of pitches increase. So the number of chances on a first pitch is much greater than on, say, the second pitch.
Right, and I see the logic there is everybody gets a first pitch, mm-hmm. not everybody gets a second and a third.
Exactly. So that there are more hits isn't that surprising. But first pitch hits, people are hitting in the low 300s for the last 4 years, and this is very consistent.
Hmm. And you did look at the numbers over the past 4 years, although I was just hoping you'd get us the numbers for the first half of this season, but thank you for doing that. Appreciate it.
Okay. So first pitch hits, batting in the low 300s. Second pitch, 0-1, it drops to 282 this season.
Right.
And conversely, one ball, no strikes, it goes up to 322.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, the announcers...
But it's really not that big of a difference.
Yeah, but I mean, announcers and even people here, I mean, they talk about pitchers being ahead of the count and how much weight the count carries in terms of pitchers being successful or batters being successful. And I think we could figure that, you know, an 0-2 count is a pretty bad situation to be in if you're a hitter, and so is a 1-2 count. Conversely, 2-1, once you get ahead in the count, you see these averages go up, so that's not surprising.
Mm-hmm. But the absolute worst position for a batter to be in is having two strikes on him.
In any situation, 1-2,
in any situation.
0-2, 2-2, and 3-2, okay.
Hitters are batting 300 or above, well, the previous 3 years, 300 or above. So far this season, 280 on 0-1. But they are in the low 200s once they have two strikes on them. So it is the absolute worst case for batters to have two strikes. It is literally 200 or less for, well, 220 or less for batters once they have two strikes on them.
And what I found interesting about that was that at 3-2, when the count is full, there's a lot of walks, of course.
Yeah.
But the batting average went up to 220, and everything else with two strikes was about, you know, 150, 160. Well, it went from about 150 to 170 to 190.
Yep.
But then jumps
so
to 220. You get 30
below
points.
200 after 3-2.
Right.
Or, you know, with less balls. So, yes, it's a very bad situation to have two strikes. And, of course, the more balls you have, the better you are. Because it literally does go down in sequence, 3-2, 2-2, 1-2, 0-2. And this is consistent for the last 4 years.
Right. Now, what about this rate of strikeouts? I was wondering, because we talked before, and the 1-2 count's getting 37% of strikeouts. Didn't that seem high to you?
It did seem high, but looking at the figures, and just judging from what I've seen, pitchers get ahead of the count, no balls, two strikes, and then they throw a waste pitch. I mean, almost every time, it seems. I'm really surprised that there have been over 1,000 strikeouts on 0-2 pitches.
And then,
I wonder if they're not all against pitchers.
Yeah. And then the 2-2 count where there's 31% of strikeouts, that really kind of shocked me too.
Yes. The 2-2 pitch, once a pitcher gets a strike or two in there, mm-hmm. people are starting to swing. People are starting to either be fooled and striking out, or they're starting to make contact a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the batters are starting to realize that, you know, with two strikes and after the waste pitch, they may be getting something useful.
Something useful. Well, yeah, I mean, it looks like, yeah, getting the two strikes on you is a problem and getting ahead of the count, but I don't think that's anything unique here in Japan. I think that would be the same in Taiwan and Korea in the United States. But
The other thing that you have is batters who foul off a lot of pitches.
Right.
So they can work the count up to 2-2 and 3-3, but these are kind of very special case batters.
Right. Well, I still like the fact that the first pitch seemed to be more power on the first pitch. We had more doubles. We had more home runs. Not more triples, uniquely. But it seems like two things to look for from now on is how your favorite teams bat on the first pitch and then what they're doing in 2-2 counts. Are they striking out most of the time? Because that seems like a dangerous count for hitters.
It does. Home runs, most of them have come on the first pitch, now that you mention it.
Yeah.
92 home runs on the first pitch, and the next best is one ball, no strike, 79 of them. So, yeah, and then after just watching the Bay Stars lose by, what was it, 6 home runs? No, I think it was 4 home runs.
Yeah, it just seems like 6.
I'm going to have to pay more attention to what pitch that is.
It's the Bay Star pitch. Well, no, it was Daisuke Miura today. So
Miura, yeah.
That's unfortunate for him. He was on a roll there. But all right, well, we appreciate it. We know you're busy, so thank you for taking the time to do the research and give us your findings on the counts.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, thanks a lot, bud. We'll talk to you again soon. We don't duck you. We want you to come on a little bit more, so we'll try to get you on.
Gotcha.
All right, bud.
Take care.
Have a good week. All right, thank you very much, Michael Westbay. We appreciate you doing that work for us. I know you're busy, so.
We do, Michael, and thank you for being really patient with me on Saturday and answering all my questions about the take one of that two-take process.
So now I bet you can do this kind of thing too, right, Jim?
Not really, because the data is all there. It's all available. Michael and I both gather it every day, but he does it in a different way than I do.
Mm-hmm.
Our skill sets are somewhat different. So anyway, I cannot. And what I do is more about looking at large. I try to build large blocks of data and see if what patterns pop up.
Right, and you're not so much, you don't look into counts so much as just results?
I don't look into counts and results so much because, specific counts, because I don't have access to that data. I always depend on Michael for that stuff, so this was really fun.
Yeah. What stood out for you?
Well, first of all, let me just say what the process here was. I listened to take one. Which our listeners, I'm not certain if we're going to say we're going to deprive them of that, but it was educational. Michael was a little down because things were a little scattered, but that was the process for the listeners where we were sort of plowing through the questions and trying to find out what it is we really wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
Say Michael and John were, and I got some really good stuff out of that. And then when I saw the data, I could understand what was going on. okay, what did I get out of it? First of all, I would say, yeah, the big surprise for me too was how good. Actually, I'm not surprised that first pitches are actually very fertile grounds for hitters.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, what stood out, and people who, I'm going to talk about the data set rather than the conversation for a brief second here.
Sure.
A moment. Is that basically, if you have one strike on you, you're pretty much in the realm of, it's the first, you know, the first pitch is almost like a freebie because you're not really in trouble in the count. If you're 0-1, you know, it's not life and death. And likewise, if you're a pitcher, if it's 1-0, it's not life and death.
Mm-hmm.
You want to really avoid that area where you're 1-2 for a hitter, 0-2 for a hitter, 2-0 for a pitcher, 2-1 for a pitcher.
Essentially for batters, you don't want to be in protection mode.
Right. It's that.
And for pitchers, you don't want to be forced to throw the ball over the plate.
Exactly. As soon as you get behind, there's two balls and you're behind in the count for a pitcher, you're in trouble. As soon as you get two strikes for a batter, you're in trouble. So the first pitch is really a freebie in the sense that you can miss it and your at bat is not over.
Right.
And after that, things get serious. So basically, the break point is the second ball of the second strike. I was also surprised. I shared your surprise at how many 2-0 strikeouts there are. Excuse me, 0-2 strikeouts there are.
Yeah.
Three pitch strikeouts. And you can say, well, there are many more 1-2 strikeouts, and that's true. 1-2 is really the home of strikeout land.
Yeah.
However, the ratio, when you've got 0-2, I was shocked that the strikeout percentage is so high, that so often that next pitch is a strikeout, is a third strike.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem like that's happening when we're watching games.
Your chances of striking out in terms of if you took everybody who has an 0-2 count and everybody who has a 1-2 count, the percentage of batters who are going to strike out is almost twice as often 0-2.
Yeah, it was a shock.
It's just that the numbers in the 1-2 are so much higher. It's such a much more frequent count. But the fact is, 0-2 is you are in danger in Japan. So don't let people like John and I and Michael, who watch a lot of games and like say every count tries to achieve a 3-2 equilibrium or something. Don't let us sway you into thinking that every third 0-2 pitch is a waste pitch.
Yeah, because it's not happening. But, you know, I like the fact that players are hitting the ball with authority on the first pitch. It's not just that they were productive on the first pitch. They were hitting. They hit a lot more home runs, a lot of doubles. I think the most doubles. And, again, Michael said, well, because everybody gets a first pitch, so there's a higher percentage of hits on those pitches. But still, I like the fact that they were hitting the ball hard.
Yeah, that is going to be the case. The OPS on the first pitch is really high. I know you talked about averages, and one of the things that I was able to do with Michael's data by putting it into my database was to look at the OPSs.
Right, which is
the on-base percentage plus slugging.
Plus the slugging, and there were 92 home runs and 226 doubles and 17 triples.
Okay. So, yeah, so the OPSs are really high. They're not as high as soon as you have the count in your favor, but as soon as you get three balls, then the OPSs shoot up because of all the walks.
Right.
But, again, not really big surprises. The big batting averages pretty much follow a straight line from what can I say, for a batter being ahead in the count to a batter being behind in the count.
Which all makes sense. I don't think, and like I said, I don't think this is unique to Japanese baseball. Most of the numbers that we looked at are probably uniform throughout baseball everywhere, that when you get behind in the count, you're in trouble as a hitter, and when you're ahead in the count, you get your pick of the litter of pitches.
Right. Now, one of the things, I think it was great that Michael went back to 2009, because I'll tell you, your original question was about 2012, but to me, the real question is not what are people hitting this year, because when you look at the grouped data for every year,
mm-hmm.
you see exactly the same pattern. It does not vary this year from last year. Even, I know we were talking, you two were talking about 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, last year, now this is, there is variation, but some of you will remember 2009, 2010, everybody, the difference was, of course, the ball, the umpires as well. 2010 was a monster year for offense. So it was a very unusual year as well. And then we went straight from that year to the year of batting dangerously. in which just the bottom fell out from all the hitters. And this year we've seen a little restored equilibrium. But basically what I'm saying is that if you look at each count over the years, you'll see this pattern. It pretty much goes best year 2010, next is 2009, then 2012, and then 2011.
Right.
Okay. That pretty much holds consistently through every single count. Now, the difference is that, but when you look at the counts as a whole, they're pretty stable. Batters are doing the same things, and pitchers are doing the same things. The batters are just less successful in every single count.
Mm-hmm.
Across the spectrum. So, no surprise.
No surprise. All right. Well, again, you can follow along, and if you want to go back and check out the data a little bit later, it's on my blog post for the entry for the podcast.
Right. I guess how often or how rarely people go 3-0 in Japan is pretty amazing. Didn't you think?
The 3-0. I saw that there were 28 hits. I saw that there were, mostly walks mm-hmm. on that 3-0 pitch, mm-hmm. so that when you get pitched around,
right.
you really get pitched around immediately. It's not like, they'll throw a couple pitches to see if you bite, and if you don't, they just go ahead and walk you.
Right.
So, I didn't actually really worry so much about that. I noticed that there were a lot of doubles
right.
and a lot of hits.
Right.
I'm sorry, not that many doubles. There are only 7 doubles, no triples, and 5 home runs on 3-0 counts.
Right.
And like I said, I just don't remember many people swinging that much at all.
Yeah, basically.
It's hard to watch every game.
First of all, I think you're right, is that although there aren't a lot of non-intentional 4-pitch walks, every intentional walk is a 4-pitch walk. And very often, so basically the numbers we're looking at is over these 4 seasons, 326 at-bats that are 3-0, but close to over 4,000 plate appearances that are 3-0, because there's 90%, I would say about 92% of 3-0 counts result in walks on 3-0. So the number of at-bat people are really not swinging at all. 9% of the time, the ball is being put in play.
Okay.
Or foul. I guess they can be fouled, and then they don't show up on here.
Right. Just one on you earn an extra pitch, but
take an extra pitch. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Was indeed, and I really want to thank Michael for going through that. Not once, not twice, but. Okay.
Not 5, not 6, not 7.
Michael went through it twice. I went through it a few times. John's must have seemed like he went through it 100 times.
Yeah, I'm tired of looking at it.
But anyway, really glad that Michael did this and that you get it. And listeners, certainly if you have any questions about it, be free to ask, and I'll be happy to share. Maybe I'll get Michael to be able to post my database thing on the web somewhere.
Yeah, he can do searches on, for example, what kind of pitches that people are swinging and missing for strike three, and he can do all kinds of searches with the data. So if you want to ask a question, go ahead and we'll get it to him, and we'll get him to answer if he has time.
When I was listening to it, I was thinking about the Ramichand chat from a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
which is, yeah, I'll take a pitch, but if it's an account where he's expecting a strike,
mm-hmm.
He might be looking for a first pitch strike to hit.
Right.
If it's where, you know, so I think, one of the things when I listened to the first take, one of the things I took out of it was the first pitch, because the objective is to, well, the objective is to win the game. Number one. Number two objective in at bat is to put the batter in a worse situation. The idea of the maximum worst being an out or a double play. But, you know, barring that, you really want to avoid getting that second ball as a pitcher. So you at some point need to throw a first strike. And, you know, you have to get a strike in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able, I mean, the rule here is if you throw too many pitches, you know, you see that really good average, well over 300 for the league as a whole. It's pretty amazing because obviously the league as a whole doesn't bat 300. The league as a whole is probably batting 250 and change or something this year.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see that, you think these guys are getting good swings because people often don't swing at the first pitch.
Right.
There's a lot of batters who will refrain from swinging. So, but if you put it up there, a lot of guys are going to smack it. If you're just trying to, as former Buffalo's pitcher Bob Mulacky said, you know, get me over slider, get that first strike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get that, you're out of the woods. Well, if you have a reputation for throwing a first pitch, hanging a first pitch slider that's going to surprise everybody, you're going to be forced to stop throwing that pretty soon.
Yeah, no more element of surprise. All right. Good chat about the counts.
Thank you again, Michael.
Thanks again. All right, let's move on to the major league guys. Ichiro, we woke up one morning this week, and I wanted to tweet it right away because I heard it on ESPN radio.
Wow.
And then I rushed to the computer to check just to make sure that these guys weren't making it up, and I didn't see anything.
Right.
And so I had the tweet already. I had it written out, but I didn't send it right away until I heard someone else. And I mean, you know, the news in Japan was slow in coming too, in that sense that it didn't come right away. I heard this report on the radio. So I was shocked, but then again, I wasn't shocked at all.
Right.
I was only really shocked because it was kept so quiet. And did you hear the Jay Buhner comment? Like,
yeah,
10 days before?
I read it. It was before the all.
It was about 10 days before. Yeah. Someone asked his reaction would be if the M's brought Ichiro back on a 3-year deal worth, somewhere between $35 to $40 million.
Mm.
And he said, basically, I'd vomit. I mean, really, no offense. We've got to get this organization turned around. You can't be spending all that money on one guy. That was the quote. And, I was kind of shocked that Jay Buhner came out publicly saying those kinds of things. And we like Bone. You like the Bone. I appreciate Jay Buhner and what he did for Mariners, and this is before the Mariners got so popular in Japan even.
Well, that was before Ichiro came.
Yeah, this is a long time ago.
That was back in the 90s.
And I think he was being honest when he said no offense. And
right.
I also think he was right, and I think the Mariners were seriously wondering what they're going to do with this guy. Now, I don't know, you know, did you see his press conference, Ichiro's press conference?
Yeah.
It sounded to me that he didn't institute the trade, but that...
No, he did.
It sounded to me in his press conference that he did.
No, well, that's what he said. It was his idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't hear that part. I didn't hear that part of him saying it was his idea, but that he had to okay all these conditions to go to the Yankees. You know, he might not play against some lefties, he might not start, he might come in as a pinch runner.
I think you missed it, because he said during the All-Star break he gave it some thought, and it occurred to him that there was really, he was wondering sort of like, what the heck are they going to want me for? I think the Jay Buhner comment, you know, hit to the bone.
And, nice.
Oh, well, that was unintended. Give me a drum roll there or something.
But I'm Bone. Jay Buhner's nickname was Bone. Yeah.
Was it? And I.
Or is when he was playing it was.
Well. He's passed away. Okay.
Yeah, I heard that part, but I thought essentially what the way he phrased it was that the organization had come to him and said, hey, look, we're thinking about this trade. What are your thoughts? And so then that he came back thinking, well, you know, yeah, I see that there are all these young players who they need to get out, get some experience. I'm holding them back.
Well, that part of the dynamic was not discussed. There's no evidence that was not the case. It was certainly he said that he requested the trade. The team said he requested the trade.
Okay.
Whether that was a result of discussions about whether he would be willing to request a trade or not, we don't know. But the situation was he did want to play for a winner. He said that there were a lot of things to consider. He had preferences, he had desires, but that there were not specific teams that he'd say, no, I'm not going to play for this team, or I'm not going to play in that situation. There were things that he made his wishes known, and the Mariners met his wishes. And so now the question is, okay, the Mariners meet his wishes, and they get, you know, they get something. What do you think about this trade?
Well, you know, it is for the betterment of the team. I have a friend who's an M's fan, and he had been complaining for the past couple, 3 years about Ichiro, and he couldn't wait for this contract to end so they could actually get rid of him. So I don't, as much as the fans love him, I think they realize that you can't pay a guy who hits singles and doesn't walk and doesn't steal bases anymore for your team. You can't pay him all that much money. You won't be able to get a power hitter who can actually produce a lot of offense from almost nothing, let's say. And then I looked at what he might do for the Yankees and, you know, what he has been doing over the past 2-3 years. I don't figure he'll be that much of a boost or a change for the Yankees offensively. Right. And they realized that batting him eighth in the first game that they put him in. And then he'll hit a little. He'll play some defense. He'll be a pest in the lineup, another pest in the lineup, because he's a bigger pest in that he can hit the ball. He's really adept at hitting, and he's going to force pitchers. You know, I like to say with the Yomiuri Giants, they have a lot of pests out there. They like to get on base and then let the power hitters deal with guys trying to, pitchers sweating while trying to throw them pitches to keep them in the park. And they're sometimes nervous.
Sweating and pesting.
Pestering.
It sounds like you should, instead of thinking about velocity, you should be thinking in terms of pest control.
Pesticide. Give me something here. But so I think he doesn't hurt the Yankees that much. He doesn't help the Yankees that much in the sense that if you put him out there every day, you're just going to get player A, just kind of a bland blend of what a player can do. But if they use him, like they said they're going to use him, which is they sit him against left-handed starters, tough lefties. They bring him in to play defense. They make him that extra guy instead of a starter. I think he's a lot more valuable to the Yankees.
Right. I essentially agree. Does he help a team? Sure. Now, can he help somebody? Yes. Now, the thing with Ichiro is always with Ichiro since probably even from his first year in the majors is separating the different areas where he contributes to your team. Now, one of the ways he really contributes to the team, and one of the ways he still contributes to the Mariners or whatever team he plays for, is in the entertainment value.
Exactly.
Because this guy, you know, this guy is such an exciting player. Even when he hits 250, he's an exciting player because of all the things he can do. He's a guy which is, you know, baseball has very few players who can be the focus of attention when the focus of attention is normally somewhere else. When the team is not batting and the ball is hit towards right field, where Ichiro is playing, especially if there are runners on base, you're thinking, what's going to happen? If he's on first base, you know, if he grounds out to third and they force the runner at second, you know, it used to be, you know, what's he going to do when he's running the bases?
Yeah.
Is he going to try to steal? Is he going to take an extra base? Is he going to be so alert? Is he going to go from first to third on a wild pitch or whatever? When he's batting, you never know what pitch he's going to hit. Any ball hit on the ground is, you know, is this going to be an infield single? Or is he going to smash it up the middle, or is he going to, you know, hit something down the line or hit something into the gap and be on third base? So it's a rare player who is that captivating in what he can do. So there's the entertainment value, and that's the Ichiro. That's, you know, that's the positive point. That's the positive reality of the Ichiro spin.
Yeah, he's also a great sell. I mean, he's going to draw fans. He's going to sell tickets. He's going to sell merchandise. And I think that goes right into the big Yankee machine of making money.
The Yankees don't get much from the merchandise because that's all pooled.
Yes, but they're going to get, it's going to explode. I mean, I saw on the news already the other day, they're just 31, the number 31 t-shirts and Ichiro stuff. They had it in the souvenir store at the stadium,
sure.
And it was flying off the shelves.
So. Well, in that case, the Yankees get a commission on the sales that they get the retail commission. But you know what? The licensing commission, the Mariners get just as much from selling those 31 shirts as the Yankees do.
So it's a win-win for all these people. So.
Sure. It's
more
good
money.
For me,
yeah.
Now, the other reality of Ichiro is the fact that while he's an entertaining player, he's not a very productive. Okay, we have to separate offense and defense. I think as a defensive player, okay, he's not the outfield star of the American League anymore, but he's still a plus outfielder.
Yeah.
Okay. And what Joe Girardi said during the press conference was that he gives them, he adds to their team speed.
Definitely.
He adds to their outfield depth. That arm, having that arm in left field in Yankee Stadium is a tremendous asset because you think left fielder, you know, the typical left fielder doesn't really work in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
Okay. It's an extra dimension to a team that has been losing that's missing that one bit since Gardner went out, and that was the point that Joe Girardi alluded to. And I think that, does he help the Yankees? Sure, he does help them. He gives them a little extra dimension. Is he going to turn into a dynamo in New York? Well, you'd think that if he could do that, he would have found, you know, he would have pushed that dynamo button before Jake Buhner said what a waste of space he was in Seattle.
Yikes. Well, talking about wastes of space, Hideki Matsui was also designated for assignment this past week. Well, geez, he's hitting 147. I mean, he wasn't really even making good contact. I was surprised he got a major league gig, to be honest. And he did exactly what I thought he was going to do, only a lot softer. I thought he'd hit the ball a little bit harder in some cases, but he just doesn't look right. I don't know if it's age. At 38, I think he'll be 39 at the end of the year.
Could be.
If it's age or something's still not right with him, I don't know. But he didn't look good in that stint.
I think his knees are not allowing him to hit the way he used to hit. I think he had that one. He needs a situation where everything's right.
Yeah.
And the problem with a situation where everything right is you need not only the opportunity to play, but you need an opportunity where you're trusted to play. And you need to be able to depend on that. That was something that was never going to happen in the Rays. They basically wanted a guy who came off the bench. And he wasn't able to get any kind of rhythm, plus whatever else is dragging him down. Plus, he's a year older. And the reason I say this is, he was tremendous in the second half last year with the A's.
Mm-hmm.
And the A's, being very smart, said, oh, good. You know, maybe somebody else will want him. Maybe somebody else will pay to get him.
Well, immediately the questions started coming out. Well, you think he'll come back to Japan? Where is he going to go next? And I know Matsui's a prideful guy, and I think coming back to Japan, especially like a time like now, is not a place. I don't think that's in his mindset.
No, I don't think it. I don't see any advantage to him coming back to Japan to be.
And I don't see it happening next year. If he does return, I think he'd do it in you know, to start out winter camp as I call it. But I think he has to start thinking about retirement. I don't know. I can't see anybody giving him any work as an outfielder. So he's just going to be, if he can be like Dan Johnson and kick around for a couple of weeks and then all of a sudden come up and hit a pinch hit home run in a ninth inning to win games, he's valuable.
Yeah, look, speaking of, of being with, being a third wheel with Tampa Bay, that would be ideal. In fact, it looked like that was the plan and it looked like everything was going according to script. You know, he hit a home run his second game there.
Early on,
And he had some big hits early on, and then he got hurt. Well, I think that's the thing is he's continually getting hurt. And this is the reality for the reality for Ichiro is that he's not a productive player, even though we all think he could be. The reality for Matsui is that he's just getting hurt all the time now. This is a different player than the one, 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah, well, good luck to him. If he comes back here, it would be with a Pacific League team, I would assume. So
I just don't see it happening. He's coming back, but if he does, what'll happen is he'll make a deal with somebody, and it'll probably be in the fall, and he'll make a deal, and they'll work towards that end, and they'll make a grand announcement when everybody's ready and satisfied. Whatever happens with Matsui, if he does come back to Japan, it'll be first class all the way. I doubt it'll be with the Giants.
Yeah, I don't see it happening, but good luck to him.
Okay.
All right, a couple of notes. The All-Star game, the last in the long, arduous All-Star series.
Arduous.
Game three was this past Monday as Jim trumpets in the background. Congratulations to the PL for winning one of the All-Star games, particularly after being called out by Morimichi Takagi of the Dragons for really basically not showing up the first two games. I mean, he had a quote saying something to the effect of, I hope they do something in that last game. And so Yo Daikon, who had two home runs in the series, he hits a three-run homer and has an RBI to win the MVP award in a 6-2 game. So congrats to the PL. They didn't get swept.
Yep.
Now, the scoreless inning streak thing that we talked about in last podcast was a bad search on my part. And what it was a horse, and Jorge Sosa of the Chunichi Dragons had allowed some unearned runs.
Mm-hmm.
But he had gone out and put up 39 innings of no earned runs allowed.
Yeah.
So I did a search on no runs instead of earned runs, and so that came out bad. So he actually gave up a run on Saturday, was it, I believe?
Yep.
Saturday against the Yakult Swallows and blew a save. And I think the Dragons, I don't want to get into it now. We can talk about it in the next show. But the Dragons' late inning situation with their bullpen is going to be interesting to watch in August and September.
Just throwing
it out there.
Precarious,
yeah.
Well, no, I think it is precarious. And it looks more so when they're playing the Swallows, which are just their, you know, it's like the for many years the Dragons have been the Tigers' personal version of hell.
Yeah.
And for many years the Swallows have been the Dragons' version of hell.
And this year,
everybody was talking about how, I mean, the story, you know, in the wire service when the Dragons would win at Nagoya Dome was their winning streak at Nagoya Dome. And the reason they had this winning streak at Nagoya Dome is because of Interleague, because it meant they didn't have to play the Swallows.
Yeah.
And the Swallows do play better at Nagoya Dome than the Dragons do.
Yeah, it's been that way. It seems that way.
They did lose. They lost on April 6th, their first game there this year, and they lost on Sunday. So they had a four-game winning streak there.
Yeah. I think the Dragons had only lost about 7 or 8 games at home, and 4 of them were to the Swallows. So.
But next year we'll see more of the Swallows being scheduled in Gifu and Toyohashi and
get them out of the
Tatsu. Places that the Swallows don't play well.
All right. So we have one comment and one question. So let's go to fielding questions. All right, so the comment was from Claudio in Toronto, and he posted on the Facebook page. He said, "Hey, John, what do you think about Ramichand's sweet revenge against the Giants at Tokyo Dome this year? He's hitting .625, 10 for 16, with 3 home runs, 6 RBIs in the 4 games he's played against them at Tokyo Dome." Yeah, I don't think it's revenge per se for Ramichand. I think he likes to jump on any wayward pitch, wherever he is, against whomever it is, and right, the fact that it's against the Giants, maybe that's a little bit of icing on the cake, but he has 2 former teams that he likes to go against, and I don't think he cares if he gets no hits against them and still gets his average where he thinks his average should be, or if he gets a lot of hits against them and gets his average where he thinks it should be. What are your thoughts?
Well, I like the way you put that, thinks it's where it should be, because he's very... Well, most baseball players are very conscious about where their average should be, even if they don't have a specific goal in mind. So that's, I think, really well put. Yeah, it was almost like pushing a button. I kept saying, you know, he's going to have a hot second half, a soft, hot second half, and you're going, okay, here he goes.
As soon as I said something negative, he just lit it.
I have to tell you, and I wonder if he heard that comment. Oh, did you tell him? You did tell him that I was expecting him to get his 2,000th hit in Japan this year.
No, I didn't tell him that. No.
Oh, you should have, because when he was with the Swallows and Adam Riggs, a pre-Mitchell report, Adam Riggs was with the Swallows.
Mm-hmm.
I made a bet that Adam Riggs, somebody hits Wayne Grassick with the Japan Times and said Adam Riggs is a candidate to hit 40 home runs, and I said, "Adam Riggs hit 40 home runs, get a life." I bet Mr. Grassick that Adam Riggs, I'd buy him a pizza if Adam Riggs hit 40 home runs. Well, I told that to some of the Swallows, and they were giving Riggs a bad time about it, and apparently he was not happy about that comment. So he was really trying to, he ended up hitting 39 home runs.
I remember that.
And I told him, you get the 40, I'll buy you a pizza too.
Right.
I feel bad about it.
Right.
And Rami, I don't remember if it was Rami Chan or Aaron Guile who told me that, you know, he'd be in practice, he had taken BP, he said, "I'm gonna get that pizza, whack, I'm gonna get that pizza, whack."
Well, maybe there's a pizza on the table for Rami Chan, because he's gone off. In fact, I think he's probably gonna be one of the top, July performers.
Okay.
For me, I've got him,
mm-hmm,
as the batter, and I think I said Kenta Maeda.
Okay. For the batter in the Central League, so we can say this, and you'll hear what the official answers are, although there's 1 game left in the Central League.
In July, yeah.
On Tuesday. So for me, the top 3 candidates, it's hard to separate them. There's not a big space here between any of them. But Yoshinobu Takahashi.
Uh-huh.
I don't have Sunday's numbers on here. He was hitting .389 this month through Saturday. And he doesn't have Rami's slugging numbers, but he has tons of walks and that great average. Rami's got the big power numbers. He's got 5 home runs. He was hitting .419. So he's got the average. He doesn't have the average in the power, but not the walks. Valentin could do it again. Another candidate they might look at, as I told you about Jun Hirose's 6 RBI night the other night. So
yeah.
But I think the thing, Valentin may well be having the best month of all. I mean, if you look at just the counting stats, he's got 13 runs, and I know he didn't add any to that yesterday. And
hard to do that when you're not in the game.
Shut out. 16 RBIs, leads the league in RBIs. Oh, actually, Abe leads the league in RBIs with 17.
Yeah, I mean, Abe's another candidate, but I just think with Ramirez in the lineup that he's in versus the other guys, that he has to produce more, and he doesn't have a lot of protection.
For the listeners out there, this is the real discussion about who's the best player as to who's got the best average, who's got the most home runs, who's got the most RBIs, who are the big fat guy, the big
power pigs,
who are the big slow guys who couldn't catch the ball if it came to them, because we don't care. Okay, sorry about big slow guys past their prime. But anyway, yeah, a lot of good, we had a lot of, as we do in July, when it's hot, we have a lot of big offensive performances, and there's a lot to choose from, particularly in the Central League.
What about Pacific League for you?
Okay, Pacific League. I'll tell you what. I'm going to hold off on my Pacific League for a second. The pitcher in the Pacific League I like is Narusse. You are right on the button about that.
Yeah.
There's a couple of guys I like, but nothing's. I do like Masaru Takeda, who's really good, but nobody has the four wins. We'll see. Somebody might creep up and get the four wins, which is usually the easy mark for an MVP pitcher of the month.
Right.
A lot of guys are in the Central League. We have one guy who's 3-0, Salomura.
Huh. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Wins and losses, but I think Kenta Maeda thought performed very well for his team, so that's why I went with him. I don't have the numbers in front of me at the moment, but I just liked what he did. He stood out for me.
Yeah, you're never a pitcher of the month for going 2-1.
Yeah. For my Pacific League guys, I had Nobuhiro Matsuda of the Hawks.
Right.
We had a lot of quality RBIs that I like, the ones that put you in the lead or help you win the game. And then Hiroyuki Nakajima, who just went nuts for the Sabre Lions. I would make those guys co-MVPs, but I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're just going to give it to Nakajima because he's got gaudier numbers and had the bigger end of the bigger finish here. That this last week of the month, he's been just on fire.
Well, he had all the hits. Yeah, he's got the average, the 377 average, and that's really hard to go against in the MVP voting, in the most valuable hitter of the month award.
Yeah,
I do. I'm. Also like you, I also like Matsuda's numbers. On the other hand, Nakajima had, you know, he scored a lot of runs. So he scored 11 runs. He had a very balance. He also plays shortstop. And of course he won last month. Would I rather have Nakajima or Matsuda? I don't know. It's a toss up. I'm not that big. I mean, Lee DeHo, you know, had a very good month.
For the Buffaloes, yeah.
Yeah. But again, he's hits. You got to do a little better than that if you're going to be the, you know, if you're going to be the hitter of the month.
All right. Which brings up in talking about Nakajima, we had a question from our correspondent out in Tokorozawa.
Yes, indeed, he's our Saitama correspondent.
All right, let's hear it.
Hello, John and Jim. Love the show as always. Here's a question from Mike in Tokorozawa, the biggest Lions fan around, and you guys are going to think I'm a homer for asking this. But I just got finished watching another three-hit performance by Hiroyuki Nakajima of the Lions tonight. I think he's had three or four games in a row where he's done this. And that brings me to my question and statement tonight. I really don't think in the last 4 years that I've been watching Japanese baseball here in Japan since moving here in 08 that I've seen a better all-round player offensively and defensively than Nakajima of the Lions. Sure, other players have put together great seasons. Abe's having a great season right now for the Giants. Chono, Sakamoto, they've also performed well. Uchikawa's had some good seasons. Even Nakamura has put up some great home run numbers. But nobody in my assessment, in my opinion, has had a better all-round game over the last half decade or so than Nakajima of the Cebu Lions. What do you guys think? Can you guys name another player that's had a better all-round career in Japan over the last half decade? Thanks a lot. See ya.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mike. We appreciate it. A better player. I think a guy who, and we forget about him because he's in the States in AAA purgatory for the Minnesota Twins, but I think Tsuyoshi Nishioka had put up some better, and this is why I would say that he was good. He was very consistent.
AAA?
Well, listen to me. Okay. First of all, if you want to define all-around player, then you've got to include defense and running.
Agreed.
Does a guy run fast? Does he steal bases? And does he play stellar defense? And I don't think Nakajima is a great runner. I don't think he plays stellar defense. I think he's really good, but he's not great.
Let me ask, who would you rather have on your team, Nishioka or Nakajima?
Well, I would put Nakajima at third base.
No, I'm just asking you, if you had a blank slate and you had nine positions to fill.
Well, you know me. You know I like the power, so I would take Nakajima. You know.
I'd take Nakajima because he's a player. He wants to play. He wants to win. Nishioka wants to look good.
Well, but he played defense. He stole bases. He hit for average. He hit for a little bit of power. He was, I think we forget him because he's gone. And he didn't stand out with that Marines team. So
well, sure
I just think he was
good. Yeah, that 2010 year, he sure stood out. But No, he's a player who does stand out when everyone's watching. When he knows the spotlight is on him, the difference between Nishioka and Nishioka has better tools, physical tools, than many. He is one of the most physically talented players in the last 20 years in Japanese baseball. But as far as the rest of the package, that he's going to consistently be good and be anywhere near as good as he can be, no, he's rarely as good as he can be.
Okay. Well, so he's got the tools.
I don't want him on my team, to be honest.
Okay.
Unless, you know, he's the last guy on a big team and, you know, he's got that syndrome where he wants to be he's good if you've got a big team and he has a spotlight to play in.
Who are some of the other players you would put in there?
Guys, I think, I like your category. I think all round players. Well, I didn't talk about runnings. I didn't talk about team speed and, speed so much. But in terms of being able to contribute on defense and to have good offense as well, I think Atsunori Inaba.
I wouldn't put him on mine because of the running speed, but yeah.
On the other hand, you got a guy who could easily have been the Pacific League MVP a couple of times if anybody gave it much thought. Another guy, similar player, who is fast. Well, he's not a base stealer. He is fast. Is Kensuke Tanaka.
Yeah. I would put him up there because he hits for average. He hits for power. He's a great defensive player. He's got the speed.
But he's not a base stealer.
He's got the speed if you need it. I mean,
Honda is a great player, although his injuries recently, but that's another story. He hasn't been as good for long, and really Mike's was talking about a half decade.
Right, he's only talking about the past 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, and if you push that back a couple of years, I would put, let's say 2004 to 2008, I would put Hirokazu Ibata in that group.
Yeah, I would throw him in.
But we're only talking about this one. Okay, I'll get to the rest of my list. I think Norichika Aoki.
Definitely.
My reservation with him had been for a couple of years that he was also becoming a star. He was developing a star mentality and being less of a ball player.
Yeah, star-itis.
Which he has returned to being in Milwaukee. Go on.
Yes, he has.
So that's great. Yeah, those guys are my big choices. There are players who I think have been more valuable, but in terms of a guy who you want, I think your question is, who do you want to be on the field in any situation? Whether it's defense, it's being the runner.
Well, yeah, if you say all around, if you just say, a guy who's a consistent hitter or a guy who plays consistent defense, I think it's different, but when you say all around, then you've got to be able to run. You've got to be able to create some offense with your legs, help the offense with you, help score runs from, if you're on second base, you have to be able to score on it.
Yeah, that's a position. Back in the 90s, we had a time where there was this rivalry in my mind for analysts, who's the best player. And we had three guys. We had Matsui Hideki, Hideki Matsui, we had Ichiro Suzuki, and we had Kazuo Matsui. And it was like a horse race every year who had the better year. All tremendous players.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is interesting. I like your definition. Do I think it's necessary? Does that make him the best? No. But it depends on what your team's needs are. And like the Yankees with Ichiro, if there's something you don't do well, then there's something to be said for having that, in the toolbox.
Right.
If your team's lacking that. So, as far as the best player of 5 years, if I had to exclude base running speed, I would say Shinosuke Abe was the best player in Japan the last 5 years.
Still
the best player. Yeah. Now, if you say all round and you limit it to that, then no, because he's not that fast.
And sludgies and pudgies don't get to waddle into this.
Right, because it's an Ichiro question.
That's
like, how good can you look I that sounds demeaning, and I don't mean it to be. But you're limiting the discussion to people who are going to help you win lots of games, even though it doesn't look good.
Well, there's no limit to the great questions that we've been getting. So thanks a lot, Mike. We appreciate it, Claudio. Thank you for the comment. And don't forget, a reminder, send us your comments or questions via MP3 file, and we'll play them on the show. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks a lot for sticking with us.
And thank you, Jim. I know you had a very long day and long morning, so.
Yeah, a long day ahead of me.
And another one to coming up, and so do I. So to you and to everybody else out there, enjoy your baseball.
Here we go.